Thank you, Ben, and thanks, guys, for actually coming back after the break to listen to me talk about some hunting billbug stuff. So you've kind of already been introduced to a different billbug species, the bluegrass billbug, but the hunting billbug is stem-boring weevil in the genus Phenophorus. The larvae of this species also feed inside the stem and then make their way down into the crown, rhizome, and eventually the soil. The hunting billbug most severely injures warm season grasses such as Bermuda grass and zoysia grass, but it's also capable of contributing to damage in the cool season species. So that makes it a really important pest of the transition zone where these cool season and warm season species can be grown side by side. Its damage appears as circular or irregular areas of brown and dying turf, but what's most important about it is that it's probably the most widely misdiagnosed insect-related disorder of turf grass. It's often confused for disease, drought, heat stress, or soil compaction. If left misdiagnosed, damage can eventually accumulate to the point where the plant is unable to uptake water or anchor to the soil. Currently, the most widely recommended management strategy is to target the adults in the early spring, the idea being to control these adults before they lay eggs and larvae begin to develop. Another not quite as successful management strategy is to target the larvae, but a lot of their early development period is inside the stem, and so they're not readily exposed to these common soil insecticides. And by the time they are exposed to them in the soil, a lot of times the damage is already accumulated to that point where all of that other stuff happens, anchoring to the soil and such. So in order to work towards more sustainable management practices, we first wanted to look at the seasonal life history in Indiana in order to improve our insecticide timing and understand which developmental stage we really want to target. So to do this, we monitor the adults with pitfall trapping from March to November of this year, and larvae were sampled on a weekly basis using cup cutters, and that were just destructively sampled in the field. What we found was pretty interesting. If you, I have the proportion of the annual population on the y-axis, so we took our weekly numbers and divided it by the total numbers that we found throughout the year, and then the month is on the bottom. And if you focus on those first two peaks, the solid line is the adults and the dashed line is the larvae. You see a high proportion of both life stages. So that indicates to us that the hunting billbug is capable of overwintering as both a larvae and adult as far north as Indiana. And because of that, we get a lot of overlapping peaks throughout the year, and this results in two cohorts that spread the damage capability of this insect over a larger portion of the growing season and really complicates the management for our turf grass managers. So next we'll move on to kind of looking at the behavior of this insect. So we wanted to understand if and how these insects are using olfactory cues to mediate their dispersal, foraging, and mating behavior, and if it's possible for us to manipulate those behaviors as control alternatives. So to test this objective, we used a binary choice Y-tube olfactometry. Purified air was pushed through a charcoal filter and divided into two air streams that were held at a constant rate and blown over two different odor sources. We used individual weevils only once, and we switched the direction of those arms after each replicate. It was deemed a response if the weevil walked upwind to the arm of the tube and 2 centimeters into the arm that corresponded with an odor source and remained there for 1 minute. If after 10 minutes they didn't walk anywhere, then we recorded them as non-responsive. And this was replicated until we reached 20 male and 20 female responses. We were interested in 5 different treatments that combined both their host material and their conspecifics. So we used 5 grams of the above ground plant material of Bermuda grass plus 30 hunting billbug males, and then divided that into just the Bermuda grass and just the male conspecifics, and did the same thing for the females, so the Bermuda grass plus the females and the females on their own. We've only finished these first 4 treatments, so I don't have the last treatment to show to you today. We used a chi-square analysis to test the null hypothesis of no preference, so there would have been a 50-50 response ratio to either the purified air control or our manipulated treatment. So what we got was pretty interesting. You have the percent response on the bottom axis, and so the left side corresponds to the percent of individuals responding to the control treatment, and the right is the percent responding to the manipulated treatment. So for that first, those first bars, the male plus grass treatment, we had 75% of males that were responding to our male plus grass treatment. You also saw a positive response in just the grass alone and the female plus the grass. The females were a little bit different of a story. They only positively responded to that first treatment of males plus grass. So we saw 80% of our females responding to the male plus grass treatment. And then if you look at the third bar down, although it wasn't statistically significant, we had 70% of the females responding to that male conspecific treatment alone. So we would say that they have a trend to respond to those males, although it's not statistically significant. So from this, we saw that the hunting billbug males responded to all treatments where their host was present. And so this could indicate that the male behavior is driven by the host plant volatiles. For the females, they only responded to that initial treatment of the male conspecifics plus the Bermuda grass, but they did show the trend to respond to the male conspecifics on their own. So we interpreted this as they are responding to a male-produced volatile cue that could be enhanced or requires the presence of the host plant material. Okay, on to another possibility for control alternatives. Since this is an important transition zone pest, we wanted to look at the host preference between those warm and cool season turfgrass species, which could help us determine where you might find these insects, where you need to treat, and if you could possibly avoid using different species or something like that. So to test this, we did a choice assay in the lab. So individual weevils were placed in a 5-centimeter petri dish with moist filter paper and 2 different stems of turfgrass. We used 4 different species, 2 cool season and 2 warm season. Our cool season species were Kentucky bluegrass and creeping benchgrass, and then our warm season species were Bermuda grass and zoysia grass. We replicated this with 20 males and 20 females. And we used feeding punctures as an indicator for host preference. So you can see those circled there. Well, we provided new tillers and counted the total number of punctures every 24 hours for a total of 3 days. And then the total number of feeding punctures was combined for those 3 days. Then we used a factorial ANOVA to analyze the data to compare, see how sex and grass choice affected the variance in those puncture data. We didn't see an effect of sex, and there wasn't an interaction between the sex and the grass species choice. So for the rest of the data, it will be combined with male and female. So first, we'll look at our Bermuda grass compared to our 2 cool season species. And what we see is we have the average total number of feeding punctures on the y-axis and then our 2 different grass species. We didn't see a preference for Bermuda grass over either of the cool season grasses that we tested. And if you're interested, we have the cultivars, Park, Patriot, Pencross. Zoysia grass was a little bit different of a story. We did see a significant preference for zoysia grass over both of the cool season species that we tested. So this led us to wonder if these insects are preferring zoysia grass specifically, and that led us to our last treatment comparing those 2 warm season species, and we saw that, again, zoysia grass was significantly, or there was a significant preference for zoysia grass. So from this, we see that there's no clear preference for those overarching warm versus cool season grasses, but we did see a preference for that zoysia grass, or at least that cultivar, specifically over all the species that we tested. So how do these 3 kind of related objectives have impact on management? So going back to our first objective, looking at the seasonal activity, that told us that you really need to choose the right chemistry. We saw both of those life stages in that early spring peak, and so you really need an insecticide that has both contact and systemic activity in order to target both life stages if you're going to use that preventative application in the early spring. The chemical-mediated behavior, that's kind of preliminary. We saw that the hunting billbug does use volatile cues to mediate their behavior, and so this is kind of a platform for further research that the possibility of developing lures in order to enhance trapping, monitoring, and maybe even mate disruption is actually a possibility. And then our host preference. I actually thought the lack of a preference for cool versus warm season was actually kind of cool, so a lack of preference for those types of grasses kind of makes it more of a problem. So if you have warm season sod and you import it, you could potentially spread that infestation into your neighboring cool season grasses. Also, those neighboring grasses that are a little higher cut and where you might not see damage, those could act as reservoirs, and the billbugs will cycle through even if you treat where you see the damage. And then Myers-Oiser grass specifically, maybe intendants that have a history of billbug problems, they might want to avoid planting it, even though I know it's a good cultivar for other reasons. But yeah, you might want to choose a different cultivar or a different species. And with that, I'd like to thank my funding, the USGA, my advisor and committee, and all my lab mates that helped me with technical and field work. And I'll take any questions. Yeah, so we're working on that. We haven't kind of gotten the methods together because we've tried a solventless method and absorbing it on a filter, but we haven't seen differences yet. But I did actually do Y-tube data comparing them to those four different species that I tested, and actually they only respond, or the males only respond to the Bermuda grass. So even though they prefer Zoysia grass in that choice assay, they didn't respond to the volatiles of Zoysia grass in the Y-tube. So we don't really know why that is, but it, I guess volatile cues aren't mediating that preference that we're seeing. Yes, ma'am?
Do you know if the larvae will actually develop in all of those different grasses?
Yeah, I think previous research has looked at the larvae impact on some different turf grass species, and they all at least develop. I think it differs in their success rate of developing, but I only focus on the adults, so I don't want to tell you something wrong, but they all do develop there, just not the same rate. Yes?
Myers and old varieties of Zoysia grass,
yep.
Are there differences in what all the stem diameter?
Yes. Yeah, there's definitely a difference in stem diameter, and I know there's been work done on bluegrass billbug preference for varying stem diameters, and they do prefer the wider stem diameter. I didn't look at that, but that's definitely a possibility. The Patriot and Meyer seem to be similar in their diameter, so I don't know if that was actually contributing in our case, but it's a good point. Anyone else? No. Thank you.
Thank you very much.